Hello and welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast, the number one comics podcast on AIPTcomics.com. This is episode 126. My name is David Brook and I'm here with Nathan Simmons.
Hell yeah. Hi, how's it going? I want to clear something up right at the top. I'm coming in hot.
Oh no. Oh shoot.
I listened to last week's episode.
Oh no. And you were told not to.
I just wanted to say there are no mountains in Florida that I'm aware of.
Look, okay, I have a topographical map right here.
Okay.
The ones that like are raised.
Hmm?
Yeah, exactly. It's a hot topical
hot topical map.
I'm rubbing my hands over. You can't see because this is a podcast, but I'm rubbing my hands over and I feel mountains.
Okay. That's what we call the ditch counties.
Oh.
It's just where all the ditch people live.
The Ditch People. Ooh, that's a good title for a comic book series.
It is, and I'm pitching it
to Image Comics right now.
Original idea, if you're listening. Do not steal. That would be the caption at the beginning of my fan fiction.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, I was up in Georgia for a week in the mountains of Georgia, and then, it was fun. It was a fun time. It was weird not being here last week and weird listening to the show without my rambling opinions. So, but I was really happy. I was really happy that Chris was able to stop by and fill in.
Honestly, I was pondering not doing it
and
just skipping a week because I also went to Florida myself
for
a little vacation weekend thing.
Not in the mountains.
Not in the mountains. I was in the Universal Studios.
Yeah.
Park. Marvel emails me on Wednesday and is like, can you interview Ben Percy tomorrow? And I was like, oh,
right.
Yes.
Of course.
And then it all kind of fell into place.
And I'm sure Chris was excited to join in on that as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it actually worked out, too, because there was no X-Men Monday this week, but there was a X-Men interview the day before that. So
perfect.
That all worked out, too.
Well, everybody, you know, you got to take some time off before everybody observes the gala.
Yeah, that actually worked out really well because the gala, the Hellfire Gala in the X-Men comics kicked off on Wednesday.
That's right.
And we got to see, Seth Meyers, Conan O'Brien, Patton Oswalt all showed up.
All of our favorite X-Men characters. Eminem.
A lot of familiar faces.
Jason Mantzoukas.
One other familiar face, actually, if you stay tuned later in the show, I interview Robbie Thompson and we talk about Suicide Squad, the current event, Red X, how he enjoys writing Red X, but also the future of Suicide Squad, which is going to Earth 3333. No, just 1-3.
Exciting.
But yeah, no, it's a really good interview. And he was on the show just a few weeks ago when Tim Sheridan joined him to talk about their crossover. So it was cool to have him. I was joking. We made a Tim Sheridan, Robbie Thompson sandwich. It was Tim, Robbie, Tim, Robbie.
Yeah. Everybody, you get it. You get all sides of the story.
We're better than cereal because we get all the sides.
Yep.
Well, anyway, this is the comic book podcast where we recap the biggest news of the week.
Yeah.
We review our favorite comics of the week. And we also have some fun segments too. But we always start with the news, and the biggest news of the week, in my opinion...
Oh, hands down.
Marvel Comics reveals... Donny Cates, we know this, Donny Cates and Ryan Segman off Venom. They're done with Venom number 200, and they are being replaced by Al Ewing, Ram V, and Brian Hitch. Get out of town. What?
Yeah, huge team.
Ewing and Ram V are some of the... probably, I would argue, the two biggest horror comics writers...
Right now, especially writing horror
too.
Yeah, writing horror for superheroes.
Right.
Venom and Venom is like a character that's tailor made for that kind of stuff. So I'm really, really interested to see because you know Cates has been doing his kind of high flying cosmic stuff for a while, and so it'll be cool to see Venom going back to the shadows.
Back to the shadows. It looks like from the art he might be going to space, but obviously...
There's shadows of space.
That's true. It depends on where the asteroids are, if they're in the way of the sun and stars.
That's right.
We really don't know much about this yet, but yeah, just knowing the creative team is insane.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Other exciting news. So Donny Cates basically swapped gigs with Al Ewing.
Right.
Him and Ryan Ottley are taking over Hulk in November. And this is interesting. So Bruce Banner is in control of the Hulk for once. And that's the kind of the twist on it.
The cover art or the interior art is so cool.
Yeah, Ottley's so good.
Yeah, this was such a weird, weird week of news for like arguably two of Marvel's most lauded characters right now. Right. I mean, Venom and Hulk have both... you know, continue to not like be slam dunk titles. So seeing the creative teams literally swap like this is just wild.
Do you suppose because of the swap, we can expect Venom to become much more of a horror book and Hulk to become much more of a punchy book?
I feel like, I don't know, just based on, you know, the description of it is that it's a thrilling epic, you know? So I think right. there might be something to that. Like Hulk might be, we might be in for a more adventurous action oriented Hulk book than we've gotten in a while.
If you're an eagle eyed reader of comics and also purveyor of Twitter,
uh-huh.
both Otley and Cates have been teasing that they're working on something. So this is that.
In like a hilariously like cheeky way too, like where they right. were like, Cates was like faking that he was gonna leak something, and then Marvel kept tweeting at him like, "Please don't." And he, it was
that's
just
right.
because we were talking about it, we were texting about it earlier this week, and I was just like, "I get how this is like maybe annoying for some people, but I always think that kind of like that kind of self promotion is kind of endearing."
Right, it shows that they're having a good time and they're sure. enjoying it, right? They're right. not slaves to a machine. They're doing what they love.
Right, exactly.
Speaking of doing what they love,
uh-huh.
we got new details about Jonathan Hickman's big plans for X-Men this week.
Yeah.
We found out a little bit more information about Inferno, which is a 4-issue series mm-hmm. with 3 different artists. It's launching in September. Those 3 artists are Valerio Schiti, R.B. Silva, and Stefano Casali.
Yeah.
Clearly some of the best artists Marvel's got right now. All told, the story will be 160 pages across the 4 issues. So that means each issue will be extra, extra sized.
And it's still interesting to me that they're going with the Inferno name. Because it doesn't oh, yeah. seem to have like any direct ties to the original event.
Right. Similar to Heroes Reborn, right?
Right, exactly. It's kind of interesting to see Marvel continuing to kind of cycle through these like older titles, like these titles with some recognition, and then doing something new with them. Aside from the Clone Saga,
mm-hmm. right? That's going on right now too, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Apparently, back in 2019, Hickman actually said Inferno was one of his favorite X events. So maybe,
right.
maybe it'll call back to that event. I'm not sure.
That would be interesting. I mean, if there's suddenly demons running around, that'd be pretty rad.
The art by Mark Brooks doesn't reveal anything like that.
Mm-mm.
If anything, it does kind of reveal something in that Gambit, Wolverine, and Jean Grey are all like incapacitated for some
yeah.
reason.
Mm-hmm.
But that art is by Mark Brooks once again, an amazing work of art, similar to when they launched Ten of Swords.
Yeah, I love these kind of like tableau covers. They're just so cool and iconic.
They are, yeah. In our next bit of news, come with me to the digital realm. No, it's not the Matrix. I like to set the mood.
Yeah, no, I fully understand what's happening now.
In our next 3 pieces of news, it's all digital related. In our first, Heavy Metal Entertainment has announced a partnership with Global Comics, a digital platform I did not know existed until this news was sent my way.
No, me neither.
No offense to Global Comics. It is surprising. For only $8 a month, it's a subscription-based. It's similar to Comixology. You get your comics digitally, but this is a subscription-based only. You don't buy single issues.
Right.
And Heavy Metal is adding not only their magazine, but their comics to this platform.
Yeah. No, I had never heard of Global Comics until you like posted this news, and now I'm really curious about it. Again, they're not a sponsor, but if they want to sponsor us, that'd be so cool.
Oh yeah, totally. Give
I would
us
love
money,
to read
please.
All of Heavy Metal in one place.
I have to say, their logo is very similar to Comedy Central, right?
No, I thought it was the logo for, oh shoot, what was it? MasterChef.
Oh my god. Let me look at this. Is it? Oh my god, it's so similar. You're right. It's like a neon sign or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool though. I like it.
Yeah. In other digital news, Dark Horse Comics is launching Dark Horse Games.
Yeah.
A new gaming and digital division. This is particularly interesting because they literally listed off Hellboy, Sin City, 300, Umbrella Academy, Polar, Lady Killer,
yeah.
Usagi Yojimbo, Resident Alien in the same breath as we are going to start making games with our IP and with other and we're other IP.
Well, and, so, and what was cool about this is that they mentioned, you know, we've got, like, we want to work on, like, smaller fan favorite IP because we know that stuff like Hellboy will always have a shelf life that we can do later. So it's kind of interesting to think of, like, what kind of, like, smaller Dark Horse stuff we might actually see develop into games.
True. I mean, there's so much because, I mean, for years there was the Dark Horse anthology where they had many stories, which a lot of which were, got their own series eventually. But there's a lot of original creative content at Dark Horse, if you don't know. And it's, it's rife to mine that.
Oh, man, an Umbrella Academy game, a Sin City. Like, can you imagine, like, a Sin City MMO?
I would like a 2D side-scroller of Sin City.
Like River City Ransom style?
Yeah. God, I mean, obviously, it'll probably be smaller games, right? Like phone games, since they're starting from scratch. But Kodansha Comics has added over 800 manga to Nintendo Switch via the Inky Pen app.
Yeah.
This is news early this week. So I'm not sure, I don't personally read manga on the Nintendo Switch, but it's a really cool thing, in part because it's just getting this content out there to different audiences. I'm sure there's a wider or different audience, at least, reading manga on a Nintendo Switch versus us going to a comic book shop.
Well, and there's a there's an exceptional amount of content available on Inky Pen. Like, the cool thing about it, like, I think, by and large, manga is a harder medium to buy in, because with comics we can buy singles or we can buy trades, but with manga you kind of have to wait for the translated, you know, volumes. So I think something like this, where you're getting an insane bang for your buck, you're not paying $14.99 per volume, you're paying $7.99 and reading, you know, thousands of issues of up-to-date series that have been going on for a long time.
Right, right. It's daunting.
It is, but it's really cool. Like, it's a, I don't know, that's a, that's for someone, if you have someone who wants to get into manga, like, this is such a cool, like, stepping stone for that. $7.99, and it's like, I've played around with the app a little bit. It's actually really easy to navigate, too.
Oh, nice. That's always a good sign, because they know what they're doing.
Right, for sure.
I mean, there's some big titles added to it, too, like Attack on Titan and Battle Angel Alita.
Yeah, for sure.
They're not skimping on that. Now let's leave the digital realm, and go to the tabletop realm.
Oh, of course.
Marvel Multiverse was announced this week. It's a new role-playing game from Marvel Comics coming 2022, where they're going to put the Marvel Universe in the hands of Marvel and tabletop RPG fans everywhere. I can't wait. Can I? I can, because I don't really play tabletop games.
I don't either. I always wanted to. Like, this is something that I feel like should be right up my alley, and I've never taken the plunge. I'm the same way with D&D.
Oh, sure, yeah. I've been doing a D&D campaign for a year and a half, but I'd never played before that. And it's a commitment.
But I feel like if you're going to get into it for the first time during a pandemic where you can't leave is pretty good.
That's true. We were actually our D&D, we were just talking about this. We're like, you know, we our first, like, maybe 5 months were in real life.
Yeah.
And recently we're like, wait, we're all vaccinated. Why aren't we actually going to each other's houses anymore?
We'd have to pick, I guess, everything
it's a little
up
too early. This Marvel news isn't too surprising to me because, like, IDW and some other publishers have, like, game divisions. They're putting out games for stuff that's lesser known characters.
Right.
Like Winona Earp, I think, has a board game.
There's a Big Trouble in Little China tabletop game. I mean,
oh my god!
Why don't we have something like this already? This is really cool.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. Hopefully, we can get a reviewer copy and we can take a stab.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
So it's not all Marvel news today. We also have some DC Comics news. DC revealed that Batman's Secret Files: The Signal is coming in July. It's a 40-page one shot focused on everyone's favorite yellow Batman character. I can say that, right? Yeah. It's written by Tony Patrick with art by Christian Deutsch. No, it looks pretty cool. I think this is great because, I mean, we haven't seen this character very much.
No, you know, it's weird. I love Duke Thomas, and I feel like, in recent years, he's kind of fallen off the map a little bit. So it's really cool to see him getting a spotlight. It's great that it's him and Cassandra Cain like teaming up.
Yeah.
I do wish that, I'm hoping that this is like another trial run to see if he can carry a book, because I feel like, right. I feel like DC has like teased us with Signal books a few times. There was a, there was like a mini series that launched out of Death Metal with the Signal. And I was just like, oh yeah, we're finally going to get the Duke Thomas series. And like half of, All-Star Batman was trying to build him up as a standalone character. So it's, I hope that the time of Duke Thomas has arrived, because I really do love this character.
Just get Tim Sheridan to do a cartoon about him.
Oh my God, that'd be great. I would absolutely watch a Signal comic.
I have
or
to say
a Signal cartoon series or movie.
The costume is really cool. It's like really well done, really well designed.
It's a great design, absolutely.
The last time I read this Signal series, and it might be the one you were just referencing, the way they were writing it, it was almost like the Signal was a mutant, and there are others like him with superpowers that were born that way.
Yeah, he was starting to discover his own latent abilities. Yeah,
right.
And like it's weird because, like I said, there's a lot of All-Star Batman was built around Batman reinforcing the fact that the Signal is not a sidekick. He's a partner. He's an equal.
Right.
And since then, we've kind of seen him pop into some other team books, you know, like The Outsiders and stuff. But I really want to see what he can do when he's out on his own. I also just love that there's someone who's patrolling, like his whole deal is I'm fighting crime in the daylight of Gotham City because no one else is going to do it.
Right. Yeah. It just jives so well with the rest of the Batman heroes.
For sure.
Also jiving.
Yeah.
Marvel revealed that the United States of Captain America number 4 will feature another new superhero.
Oh, yeah.
Captain America character, Ari Agbayani. Uh-huh. This is a character created by Alyssa Wong and Jody Nishijima. Mm-hmm. So this is a Captain America that protects a college or colleges. If you don't know, this is a series by Christopher Cantwell and Dale Eaglesmith that has Steve Rogers going across country to, I believe, capture or reacquire his shield.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, he's discovering that there are younger characters calling themselves Captain America, and they are heroes in their own right, mm-hmm. in their own parts of the country. So it's really cool that like this series is kind of ushering in these newer characters.
And we've got a Filipino Captain America. That's dope.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
this there's a variant cover by Peach Momoko, who is quickly becoming like the cover artist that I seek out the most.
Yeah.
It is so cool. It's such a good, the design is so great. I'm really excited for this miniseries.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see how much attention they give to each one of these characters, because it could be like a flash in the pan. Here's the character. We'll never see them again. Or it could be like a really cool start to something else.
I'm hoping for more. Yeah. I feel like, you know, the it's a road book. So like each issue is going to take place in a different area and introduce another character who's been inspired by Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson's legacy. So yeah, I really hope that this is like the start of something new.
For sure. Do you think they'll end up in your hometown? Eventually, which way are they going?
Panama City.
We don't know where they must be. They probably start in DC, right?
Well, yeah, America. If they end up in Panama City, we're gonna meet the first meth head Captain America.
Oh no. Well, what if they show up and they're like, oh my God, the entire city's been reduced to rubble. What happened here?
Captain Florabama.
I got a beer when I was in Florida last weekend.
I'm sorry.
It's called Florida Man.
Was it the IPA?
Yeah.
It's actually not bad.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I was looking for local beer.
Yeah.
And I reflected on how I couldn't find it anywhere. Like, it was just Bud Light everywhere I went.
Yup.
I was like, huh, this is odd. Also odd, in our next bit of news, Doctor Strange is coming back, folks. He hasn't had a series in over a year. But the death of Doctor Strange was teased by Marvel Comics on late Friday. We know nothing else, literally nothing else besides this teaser image. And also the text, the final saga of Marvel Sources Supreme begins this September.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering who the creative team would be. Who's available? Ed Brisson, maybe?
I mean, I guess I can write it.
All right. Marvel, I can give you his address.
Yeah, it's interesting. This news popped up right as we started recording. And there's no information other than the title.
Yeah. They did the same thing last week with Inferno. Like on late Friday, they were like, Lamb, here's the title.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, coming soon. So we'll probably find out next Thursday or Friday more about this.
Probably when this episode drops, everyone's already going to be like, oh, of course. Yeah. We already know everything about it. Paul Scheer's writing it. How great would that be?
Dude, if Paul Scheer's writing this, I am going to buy you a beer. Well, I would buy you a beer anyway, but still. Who'd be the artist? Alex Ross and Paul Scheer. What a match made in heaven.
Incredible.
In our next segment, our top books of the week, we're going to talk about our top two favorite comics out this week.
Yeah.
I want to go first.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet. I really liked Catwoman Soul Stealer. It's a graphic novel that was adapted from Sarah Maas's novel.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
By Louise Simonson, with art by Samantha Dodge. So...
it's a good team.
Is for young adults, but honestly, there's swearing in this. There's some subtle sexual themes. it didn't feel like it was for kids, is my point. I think the biggest draw for me reading this one, and I think it will be a draw for you too, Nathan, is that it's so very noir.
Awesome. Yeah.
So Simonson's clearly trying to not lose the prose that Moss wrote. So there's a lot of captions, but that ends up giving it that detective brooding, like, I was in the shadows. I felt sick.
Like, you know, Brubaker's kind of Catwoman, kind of.
Yeah. And so it has that, but also, almost the entire book is black and white, aside from Catwoman's very subtle purple costume and Batwing's, very subtle blue, but very bright yellow bat symbol on his chest. So you've got that noir element going. It's not necessarily a detective story, but there is mystery involved. Just to break it down really quick, it introduces Catwoman. She's a teenager who's fighting to make some cash to help her sister who's sick. Ends up getting caught by the police because she has no parents and she needs a parent, I guess.
Yeah. Like a guardian?
A guardian to be watching her, over her.
Yeah.
And then in jail, or when she's at the police department, a woman named Talia shows up and is like, hey, I have a really cool school in Europe. Want to go to it? And I'll teach you stuff, and I'll take care of your sister. Mm. Obviously, Talia al Ghul is this character. So from there, we learn a little bit about Batwing. He was actually a soldier in the war. He's dealing with PTSD. He's trying not to let Bruce Wayne down while Bruce Wayne Batman is out of town, and he's trying to, you know, be the Batman for Gotham.
Yeah.
So these two characters entwine. They obviously have sort of different ideas about justice and being a hero.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. There's a tension between them. They end up kind of falling for each other in a little bit of a way. But it's what's the coolest thing about this book is how it's very clear Sarah Maas, her original work, she read plenty of DC books, understood these characters, and then remixed them, right? Like Joker shows up, Harley Quinn, but they're not the Joker and Harley you know, but they're remixed in a way that's, she did her homework and it all makes sense. And it's a little different. It's like a cool twist. And so that way it's accessible to really everyone.
Nice.
So yeah, that was my second.
That sounds really good. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, for sure.
I always heard the novel was really good. I just never got around to reading it.
Oh, remember when DC released that trailer for it too? It was like it's all CG. It's really cool.
Yeah.
What was your second favorite book of the week?
My second favorite book of the week was Out of Body Number 1 by Peter Milligan and Anaki Miranda. This is such a weird little occult detective type story. It follows a guy named Dan who suddenly wakes up in the hospital and he's in a vegetative state. He was attacked. He doesn't really remember what happened to him, but he can't move, but he can hear everyone around him and think about everything that's happening. So he's through the issue. Every time someone comes to visit him, he is trying to figure out, are they the person who wanted to kill me? Is this, what's going on? Like, why doesn't anyone realize that I am aware of what's happening? And meanwhile, there's another character who is a channeler, and she can speak with the dead. And because he's half in and half out of life, she's getting messages from Dan. And it looks like it's setting it up for them to kind of meet in the middle and figure out what happened to him. Meanwhile, there's also a character who is hinted to be the literary character Dorian Gray, who wants to steal Dan's soul. And that's unclear why he needs a human soul.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just so much going on. And then at the midway point, Dan is a character who, he is a psychologist who uses, hallucinogenic psychedelic substances, in his therapy, and mm-hmm. his girlfriend stops by and is like, "Hey, if you're really gonna die, I wanted to give you something like to take you out easy." So she basically gives him some acid, and he goes on a trip where he leaves his body. And so it's kind of like a mystery thriller with astral projection and demons, and it's a whole lot to smush into one first issue. But it the pacing is perfect. Like it's a perfectly paced comic.
Nice. That's always like a huge win for me.
Yeah, and Miranda's artwork and the colors by Ava De La Cruz are just unbelievable, especially during like the trippier segments. Like there's like a lot of like weird Binde dots and it almost, there's one shot that just kind of looks like he's in a lava lamp. Like it's very weird. Ooh. But he leaves his body, steps out of the hotel, and then sees thousands of souls just like him above his head, like hinting at this wider version of the afterlife than we even have any idea of. It's a very weird and darkly poetic first issue, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing where this goes.
Would you say it's an out of body experience to read it?
It sure is, Dave.
Back to you, Dave. Oh man,
but yeah,
that's really cool.
That came out this week.
Aftershock,
from Aftershock
Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is why we're like so lucky. Like, yes, Marvel, DC's, I mean, they do good stuff, but to have more publishers, you get stories like this.
Oh yeah, Aftershock, and I mean, when I was in Georgia, I was at this comic shop in Blue Ridge. Shout out to Mountain Man Comics, and they were asking me like what I like to read, and I what my favorite publishers were, and I was like, Boom Studios, Aftershock, and Vault are like doing some of my favorite books right now. I was like, of course, I love Batman, I love Spider-Man, but man. If you're looking for something outside of that, there's so many more options than we used to have.
Right. How did they react when you said those publishers?
They were really excited about it. Oh, nice. Yeah. They were like, oh yeah, I've been reading, we talked about Spectre Inspectors, which made me really happy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think you're definitely getting quoted on that trade, by the way. They quoted you again in a press release today.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. I think they sent a preview for number 5.
It's one of my, it's maybe my favorite book on the shelf right now is Spectre Inspectors. I was a little sad about not being on the show last week because I didn't get to talk about it.
Oh, I know, right? I actually thought about that too, because I was like, oh, that's out. I bet he wants to talk about it next week. But
the only time I won't talk about a new issue of Spectre Inspectors is the episode I'm not on.
If anyone dislikes Swamp Thing, somehow get Nathan off the show on select dates. You know which ones.
Sure.
My favorite book of the week was Heroes Reborn Double Action number 1 by Tim Seeley and Dan Jurgens. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, Heroes Reborn is like an alternate universe, basically where the DC Comics Justice League has taken over as the premier superhero team of Earth, because no one ever found Captain America in the ice, and therefore the Avengers were never created. So there are characters, there are Avengers characters in this universe, but they're not necessarily superpowered because of the way the events played out.
Mm-hmm.
And in this issue, which focuses on Nighthawk and Falcon, we find out that the events that took place that ended up killing Gwen Stacy similarly happened to Nighthawk and Falcon.
Right.
And while the Green Goblin doesn't exist, the Goblin does in this universe.
Right.
One of the reasons why this book is my favorite book of the week is because it's playing around with classic comic storytelling. There are editor's notes to books that don't exist, but they do within this universe. There's a letters page that is just hilarious to read. It's at the end of the book, as if this is an actual physical comic, Marvel Double Action,
yeah,
that existed within the Heroes Reborn universe. As if maybe it's propaganda in a way of about Nighthawk being this hero, because we know from the other books that Blackhawk is actually not such a great guy. He's basically a riff on Batman, but kind of evil.
Right.
Or at least he breaks necks.
And it's also like the dialogue is written in a way that's like sort of purposefully over the top and sort of like,
yes.
Very like melodramatic.
And there are thought balloons, which we don't see in modern comics anymore.
Right.
Also, another thing that's really cool, there are these like little advertisements on the bottom of each page or some of the pages that you have to read by reading three pages back to back to back of just the sentence at the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
Little neat things like that that you just don't see in comics anymore. So basically, this book is like a celebration of the comics we grew
for
up
sure.
with.
This is
and that style.
This is one of the only Heroes Reborn tie-ins I've read so far, and I really, really liked it a lot.
And there's also like visual nods. Jurgens is clearly playing off of Gil Kane's art,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool, and just like very big and in your face at times in a way that it's so nostalgic.
For sure.
And that's why the cover too is just gloriously gorgeous.
Yes.
It's like actually like a person holding a physical book that's like got the shininess and the wear and tear of those old comics that we used to always just like trash and dog ear. Totally check that out. I've liked Heroes Reborn. I think it's just like silly fun mm-hmm. event, and luckily it's weekly, so it's not like you have to wait for it, and it's not a bazillion tie-ins. It's like no more than two or three a week.
Yeah, and the tie-ins have more like enriched the main story. They don't feel like they're not to say that they're like disposable, but they're also not like necessary. It wasn't like we've seen some events in recent months where if you missed like one of the 15 tie-ins that week, you actually didn't understand something happening in the main story,
right? Which is so frustrating.
Sure.
It's like, why didn't you just put that in the book?
Yeah, just put that in the other book, the oversized book you're doing.
It's like reading like a Stephen King novel and he's like, oh, and then the guy died. So next up,
yeah.
It's like,
and for more information, read this Joe Hill book instead.
Yeah, editor's note, read Joe Hill's da-da-da-da-da to find out how the main
right,
character died.
Right.
What was your favorite book of the week?
Surprise, my favorite book of the week was The Swamp Thing number 4 by Rom V and Mike Perkins.
Yeah.
This continues the storyline of the new Swamp Thing, Levi, and his friend Jennifer getting sucked into the green and going on a sort of Alice in Wonderland-esque journey. The majority of this issue follows Levi being guided through the green by an echo of Alec Holland, the Swamp Thing that most people are familiar with. And he's sort of showing him the legacy of the character. There's this incredible moment where they touch the ground and there's sort of like a ripple effect, almost like you're seeing like the rings in a tree. Mm-hmm. And in each ring, there's all of these moments from throughout 50 years of Swamp Thing comics. So there's, you know, there's images from, you know, Alan Bissett and Bernie Wrightson artwork and stuff like that. So you'll see John Constantine's first appearance in like the corner, and there's a picture of Anton Arcane, and there's an image of Swamp Thing battling the Floronic Man, and there's just all this cool stuff that kind of sends the message that it all happened. I've talked about this before. One of my favorite things about Vendetti and Hitch's Hawkman is that it had this ethos of every story you've read mattered. Happened in a different way, but it all mattered, and this is the sum of the experience. And this issue is kind of based around passing the torch to the new Swamp Thing, and you get this feeling that not only is he the new Swamp Thing, he is the Swamp Thing. There's each one of them is the sum total of every Avatar's experience in the role. And so mm-hmm. There's something really exciting about that, to think that not only will all this history be pulled from, but it now kind of matters to the main character in a way that it didn't before. Mm-hmm. And it also sets up some wild stuff to come. And the next issue is team up with John Constantine, but I know that there's a Suicide Squad crossover coming up as well. And it's just a really cool time to like to be into Swamp Thing. And also, there's some really great subtle connections to Ram V's Future State Swamp Thing miniseries, which was really intriguing because I thought that that was easily the best out of the Future State books. Again, reinforcing that it all matters regardless of whether or not it's even happened yet.
There's some great horror visuals in there too.
Oh, yeah.
Gross out stuff.
For sure. The design of Jason Woodrue in this book is incredible, where he's, you know, the idea is that he's like half formed. He never quite became a swamp thing like he wanted to be. So this version of him is hollowed out like it's a rotted stump or something. He like doesn't completely close in the back. And something about that makes him even more unnerving.
It's a really neat idea. It definitely makes him more of a foil to Swamp Thing, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. Like he's 100% like the Iago to Swamp Thing's Othello in the story. It's really cool.
Man, what a time. I love the idea too to like say, "Oh, Alec Holland is not necessarily the, you know, main the number one Swamp Thing. There's always
another person, or can be. You know, no spoilers for Justice League Dark, but his time may be over, at least as long as Ram V is working on these characters.
Right. Nice.
Yeah, it's a hell of a book, and I hope it's doing well. I feel like critics are reviewing it really positively, but I know that Ram V is basically keeps referring to this as like season one of the Swamp Thing. So like if it does well, then we'll get more than these 10 issues. And I really hope that's the case.
It's in really good hands right now.
Absolutely. And
it, that's not necessarily the case in all of its history.
Right. For sure.
That's it for Top Books of the Week. In our next segment, Standout.
Pow!
Moment of the Week.
I looked forward to doing that.
Oh man! So this is where we pull one panel or page from a comic that was out this weekend, and we go, hell yeah,
hell yeah,
give me more comics.
Yeah,
Nathan, what was your favorite Kapow moment of the week?
Man, I love Batman: The Adventures Continue season two. I wrote number two, but it's not number two; it's number one. Anyway, Batman: The Adventures Continue, season two, number one, kicked off a new story arc. If you guys aren't familiar, it takes place between Batman: The Animated Series and the Justice League Animated Series, but brings in stuff from more modern comics and fits it into that continuity. Confused? Cool. it's like a feast for people who love those cartoons, but also has some really clever ways that it's incorporating these newer ideas. For instance, this story arc is going to follow Deadman and Batman fighting against the Court of Owls. And the moment that I've been thinking about all week since I read this is that Deadman has been following Batman around because Batman is being stalked by Talon, the Court of Owls assassin. And you know, Deadman can't be seen by anybody. He can't warn Batman. He's like taken over a couple of people to kind of rescue them from being killed. But this all kind of comes to a head when the Talon turns and looks at Deadman, and Deadman has this moment of, oh my God, he can see me. How can he see me? And of course, if you're familiar with the Talons, he can see Boston Brand because he's dead also.
Right.
And to me, that is just such a holy shit. How have we not seen this moment in a comic yet? Like, this is so cool. It's such a clever use of these disparate characters in a story that like forwards the animated series legacy. That moment has just stuck with me all week as just being so clever.
I freaking love the Deadman when he's like see-through, even in the gutters.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like he's popping out of the book.
There's a couple really of moments neat. Where Batman is like, it's so funny, like that they've just put Deadman in the background of a panel. Like there's scenes where he's just kind of shrugging, or there's one spot where Batman is like going through a book about the Court of Owls and Deadman's just kind of popping his head up through the floor in the corner right. of the panel just to kind of like look and see what he's doing.
It's so funny, isn't it? Like Deadman, like some of his most iconic scenes ever, he's always just kind of hovering over somebody being like, don't do that.
And there's a way that Ty Templeton, and this is a thing that carries over from the DC, like the older Batman Adventures comics, Gotham Adventures comics, is that Ty Templeton's Deadman is simultaneously unsettling and then kind of adorable at the same time. Like he's just got those big old eyes.
Yeah, he's not very scary.
Yeah, this book rules. And I liked season one, but even just in this first issue, I'm so much more impressed with season two.
Awesome. It's like they learned something and carried that forward.
Yeah, for sure.
My favorite Kapow moment is almost an opposite. It's not so much cute. It's just hilarious and, you know, out of this world funny. Mm-hmm. Hellions number 12 by Zeb Wells and Steven Segovia. This book, there was three Hellfire Gala books mm-hmm. this week, and this was one of them. But this one, the Hellions aren't so much the, you know, most stand-up heroes amongst other mutants. And most of them get outrageously drunk and belligerent at the party.
Classic.
Including Nanny, who has had too many, I think, and is really just pissed off at Mr. Sinister for putting them in danger, putting her little boy in danger. Uh-huh. And she, like, straight up calls him out. I'm like, I'm going to get you. But, like, Nanny's the funniest, weirdest character of modern comics, I think. There's one panel in particular. So she's been nagging Mr. Sinister the whole night. She's kind of, like, clinging to him and totally ruining his party presence mm-hmm. because there's this giant egg person standing near him the whole time. And there's a scene where there's a shot or a panel rather where Mr. Sinister's looking down at her, just like, ugh. And he's like, "We're consuming a lot of alcohol tonight, aren't we, hun?" And she burps and goes burp, and you see her not drinking the drinks but pouring them over her head.
Classic.
And he goes, "Sweet God!" And it's so funny. And there's multiple moments in Hellions this week, just so hilarious. It's got to be the most fun you can have in comics when you're laughing, when you want to laugh.
Oh, for sure.
It's just outrageous.
Yeah, that's great.
But yeah, if you go to aiptcomics.com and go to this podcast post, you can see those panels we were just talking mm-hmm. about. In our next segment, Top Books for Next Week, we're going to talk about our most anticipated comic out next week. And mine is X-Men number 21 by Jonathan Hickman, Russell Dodderman, and many more. There's a bunch mm-hmm. of artists on this one. This is officially the unveiling of the new X-Men team, which we know Jerry Dugan and Pepe Larraz will be taking on. This is also Jonathan Hickman's last issue of X-Men.
Right.
So for that reason alone, I'm very curious. Like, how is he going to close out his run, right?
Right.
He's such a planner that he's got to be probably laying some seeds for what's to come, but also, you know, putting a period on the end of this 21 issue run.
Sure.
And this series under Hickman has also been very episodic. Every issue is pretty much self-contained, usually introduces some big new idea. So we're probably in for a real treat. There's a lot of really cool artists involved in this one too. I mean, Russell Dodderman's one of the best, who's mostly doing covers lately, but it's been cool to see how many pages each artist gets too.
Yeah.
What is your most anticipated book of the week?
My most anticipated book of the week is DC Pride number one, written and drawn by a ton of people. we've talked about this on the show previously, but this is 80-page anthology is all based around LGBTQIA+ characters from DC. So it'll have, you know, Batwoman, Poison Ivy, Midnighter. Really excited to have Steve Orlando writing Midnighter again.
Yes.
And Flash of Earth 11. There's a Dreamer story written by Nicole Maines, who plays Dreamer on the Supergirl on the CW. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just a lot to be excited about here. I am very happy to see these characters getting a spotlight. Particularly, there's a Renee Montoya story by Vita Ayala, which, like, I adore Renee Montoya. Mm-hmm. Especially as the Question. So seeing that version of the character make a comeback is really cool. You know, and I, as we've said before, like there is a certain part of this that you hope it's more than just, you know, putting on a face, you know, like putting on an inclusive face. Like you want more of this. And I hope that I hope that it does well, and I hope that people embrace it and enjoy it, and I hope that it isn't just performative. I hope that this is something we can expect to see more of in the future. But in the meantime, I'm really happy to see all of these characters and creators getting a spotlight. I mean, Cena Grace is doing a Pied Piper story. How does that not sound great to you? Aqualad is getting a story in this. Like, John Constantine's in this somewhere. I'm really, really pleased. I saw this thing recently that James Tynan posted about, you know, feeling very lucky to be an openly queer creator who is, you know, receiving so much attention and, like, you know, people really love the books that Tynan's making. And I think that that's an important thing for people to feel, not just to feel accepted and appreciated, but to be accepted and appreciated. And I hope that this is a step in the right direction.
Right. Yeah, no, the representation is so important.
Absolutely.
There's also interviews in the back of this from actors from the movies, or sorry, TV shows.
Oh, cool. I did not realize that.
Yeah, like Dreamer, the actress who plays Dreamer is in there, mm-hmm. Batwoman, Matt Ryan, who plays John Constantine, does a short interview.
Oh, great. He's great. I saw him at a con a couple of years ago, and he's an absolute doll.
Oh, and Matt Bomer.
Oh, I love Matt Bomer. Matt Negative Bomer, man. By the way, y'all, if you haven't watched, if you haven't watched Doom Patrol, what's wrong with you? But if you haven't watched Justice Society World War II, the new animated movie, Matt Bomer crushes as Barry Allen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, oh, nice. I really enjoyed him in that.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I think we have early access, too, so we can read it over the weekend.
Excellent.
Just a humble brag. In our last segment, in our next segment, Judging by the Cover Jr., what is our favorite cover art out next week? The cover you must hold within your hands to get to the digital realm. That's right, this joke is back. Dave picked Magic the Gathering number 3 by Mike Del Mundo. Also, if you go to aiptcomics.com and go to this podcast post, you can see this art in full. But this is a gorgeous cover. Mm-hmm. It has a really cool border with like the cityscape all around these main characters that are basically, it's like a poster to a movie, practically, the way it looks.
It also kind of looks like a card, which I love.
Oh, that's true, yeah. it's got a border within the border kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Characters all look cool. The way they're displayed, you get a sense of their powers or their vibe, mm-hmm. which is all really cool. But, like, the coloring in particular is really neat to me, particularly with the border, and there's, like, cool green shading amongst these buildings. But also within the character, within the drawings of the characters as well.
Yeah,
I could just see this on a poster on my wall, or even a work of
it's
art
so
on my wall,
cool.
And be like,
"Yeah."
I wouldn't have to tell them it's from Magic. I'd just be like, "Oh yeah, this is a great work." And they're like, "Oh, it sure is." What is your favorite cover art out next week?
My favorite cover art for next week is Heroes Reborn Squadron Savage number
1.
Holy
shit! Look at this thing.
The David Blatt variant. It's so cool, right?
Blatt. Yeah, it's really cool. It's like a horror movie poster.
Yeah, and the dope thing about this lineup is weird. The whole idea is the DOD has put together a sort of Black Ops team. This is like the Heroes Reborn universe version of the Thunderbolts. Mm-hmm. But they're it's Elektra, the Punisher, Crossbones, Cloak, and a character called Murder Hornet. Who I'm not Ooh. Sure if they're. I feel like they're maybe a new character. I apologize if there's Murder Hornet stands out there and I'm just ignorant. But it's a great cover design. Everyone's enveloped in cloaks, cloak, which is always a great design choice for me. I love Crossbones rocking a more MCU-centric design with a mm-hmm. heavy, you know, Stark armor-style look. Punisher looks like he's got some gray around the edges, looking kind of grizzled. Elektra just standing right in the middle, holding up her size and looking like she's going to stab the reader if they take their eyes off the cover. And Murder Hornet throwing a bunch of hornets murderously.
As we expect. Yeah.
It's just a cool looking poster. Like you said, it looks like a movie poster. If this is something like, if I saw, you know, coming next summer, you know, Squadron Savage, I'd be like, absolutely, two tickets, please.
Yeah, your eye just kind of wanders around the cover.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially with Cloak's cloak. It's so cool.
Yeah. And that's a design choice that they used also in the main cover, where everyone seems to be leaping out of the cloak. I mean, it's
right.
If you've got Cloak on your cover, you gotta take advantage of the threads, man.
That fashion is very important to highlight.
Absolutely. Walk, walk, fashion, baby.
Oh, God. In our last segment, join us with Robbie Thompson, who will talk about Suicide Squad, the future Suicide Squad, tips he learned from Mark Waid on writing a team comic book, and more. So, Robbie, it's been a few weeks since we last spoke. We talked a little bit about Teen Titans Academy and Suicide Squad's crossover. And next week, Suicide Squad number 4 drops, and it's part 3 of the crossover, is that right?
I guess so, yeah. I think we did the math on this last time, and I'm really bad at math, but yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we kind of, Teen Titans Academy kind of hints at it at the beginning of, or at the end of one of their issues, and then we have sort of like the 3 full issues of crossover shenanigans, which has been fun.
I was lucky enough to read Suicide Squad number 4 early, and I have to say, it's a really fun issue. I don't know how much I can talk about, but basically, Red X... You want to get into it? All right, good. So yeah, Red X is like captured, and I just love like the... I want to call it a puzzle box, because you've got him trapped in a situation where you don't think he could ever get out. When you're approaching a story like this with a trap, how do you approach it? Where do you start? Do you start at the end of how he gets out, or do you start somewhere else?
You know, it's an interesting question. I think that we kind of talked about it as a group of, you know, coming from a place of, you know, less about beginning and end and more about character. And, you know, with Red X, you know, he is this mysterious person, but, you know, he's got this, I think Waller calls it like a, you know, Batman level, you know, intellect, you know, sense of strategy and stuff like that. So we really wanted it to seem like, you know, a la Rorschach, you know, you guys are trapped in here with me. And you know, that I guess technically speaking, it sort of, you know, began with the ending because we knew he was getting out, but really it kind of came from a place of like, let's really, you know, continue to tease out this character that Tim has been, you know, teasing out in the Teen Titans Academy book. And so it kind of started from that place, which naturally led to, okay, well, we know he's getting out. We know that at a certain point, he's going to pull the switch and say, I've been in control this whole time. So yeah, it kind of all kind of, you know, comes at once, but really kind of comes from character. And then you kind of build the pieces out. You know, I knew some stuff that, you know, Tim had done obviously in his book, and we wanted to, you know, kind of keep building on top of that. And so, you know, fortunately, we were also working with great editors who could kind of say like, okay, well, cause I think in an early draft, maybe I had some similar action, you know, that felt like what we had already seen in Teen Titans Academy, and to be able to make sure we're mixing that up and keeping it fresh was extremely helpful.
I don't know why I'm invoking this, but there's a recent Rick and Morty episode with the heist. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Watched that episode like 700 times.
I'm a son of a bitch, I'm in.
Exactly. And, you know, on some level with this breakout of Red X and him fighting, like, you know, he's got a plan. He's always 5 steps ahead, right? He's almost like Batman in that way, isn't he?
Yeah. No, it was, you know, I've only written Batman a couple times, and every time, like, the note is always like, Batman's 10 steps ahead. Like, I've, you know, for the longest time I've been wanting to pitch to the Bat Office, like, Batman colon dumb, like the one day he was just like, didn't have a plan, you know, like the one day he just didn't have the answers, you know, like, it's like Batman's off day. But no, he's 100% like, you know, Batman in that regard. It's, you know, if you think about it, like, as a chess player, you know, like in, like, you know, the Queen's Gambit, you know, he's thinking several steps ahead. And, you know, that's sort of an interesting, you know, foil for a character like Amanda Waller, who prides herself on thinking several steps ahead. And, you know, early on in this run, we really wanted to establish that, you know, Waller, who is, you know, a typical, you know, typically depicted as a badass, and she is, you know, may not be, you know, thinking completely as she normally would. And we'll get into, you know, why she's, you know, doing what she's doing in later issues. But it felt like Red X was a good character if we wanted to have Lawler to have sort of an L, if you will,
right,
to be a natural foil for her. And it turned out to work to our advantage.
Let me ask you, Red X, there's a shot of Red X with a bazillion chains holding him to the walls. Yeah. Was that your choice or Eduardo's?
I think I said in the script, like, he's got a bunch of chains, and I think I may have tweaked the line that Culebra has as a result of how many chains. But we definitely wanted it to seem like, you know, it's almost like the absurdity of Hannibal Lecter in the hockey mask and, you know, strapped to a gurney and being, slid across that airplane, you know, airplane hangar in the movie. Like, we wanted it to definitely seem like, you know, Waller and her crew were taking him very, very seriously, but also to show the flip side of that, you know, X had a plan for all this stuff.
Something else I've really liked in this series, you get to see the laundry room of the Suicide Squad building.
Yeah.
Do we get to see any other buildings, and will we get like a full, like one of those cool, like cross-sectional, like breakdowns of a building in Suicide Squad?
We did a cross section in Future State that was really fun. You know, the whole idea of a laundry room was kind of, you know, inspired by Ostrander's run, which, you know, had, you know, more like almost, I don't want to call them like domestic, you know, situations, but like scenes where you just saw them like hanging out, having lunch. And, you know, I needed a place for, you know, that Peacemaker had figured out that there was sort of a corner of that, of Bel-Rev that he could, you know, talk secretly to his crew, and sort of combining those two ideas is where it came from. We don't have any plans to do a cross section, but I'm going to be honest with you. Now I want to. So maybe, maybe if we can
give it to us, Robbie.
They will be going to some other sort of secret Task Force X layers, I think I can tease in subsequent issues. So we can definitely also think about cross sections there. I love that stuff. Like, you know, I know it's from the other publisher, but I, you know, I remember as a kid seeing like those cross sections of like the Baxter Building or, you know, you know, Xavier Mansion, and it was just like I wanted to live in all those rooms. You know, it was like a good way to kind of build out the world too.
It's so fascinating because it's actually giving you more detail, but somehow it opens up your imagination even more.
I totally agree. Cause like, you know, you're oftentimes just seeing like a snapshot, you know, of like, oh, it's here's where the Fantastic Four eat lunch or whatever. But then you realize, oh, that's above a training room. And this is the room where, you know, Reed Richards has his lab, and like, you realize that, you know, these are places that they really live in. And, you know, I think if you really love a book, you want to live in that world too. So it's kind of like, being like invited over for like a sleepover or something and getting to see how people really live their lives.
Right. One interesting thing I was thinking about. Okay, so it's a mystery. We don't know who Red X is. We talked about this last time, and Tim was saying,
"Who Red X is.
You don't know who Red X is." Okay, that was actually my question. Because honestly, I mean, we know Tim Sheridan does, and we know Mike Cotton knows.
I'm going to tell you this is an exclusive. I will tell you who Red X is right now.
Okay,
it is.
Great.
It is actually Tim Sheridan.
Oh,
Tim
my
Sheridan
God.
Is Red X. And I say that only half jokingly. Like, the advantage of working with Tim, you know, he's a terrific writer and a great collaborator, but, you know, he knows where he's going. He has this all laid out. And so I could always really lean on him, you know, in the early stages of it. But also, he was gracious enough to, like, you know, look through scripts and look through the final, you know, issue and make sure that we were, you know, in keeping with, you know, his vision of Red X and where they're going. You know, I do have a sense of where they're going, and it's really cool and fun. But yes, you heard it here first. Red X is actually Tim Sheridan.
Well, it's so funny in comics when we don't know the identity of a character. I'm thinking of like Ronin when Bendis introduced that character years ago.
Yeah.
And like, we're all like reading the dialogue, like, oh, we can figure out who it is. But knowing now that you don't know who Red X is, you write this dialogue. Well, here's a question then. If you write the dialogue the wrong way, will someone tell you because it's not technically the voice of the character?
Of course. Yeah. So for me,
that's
it was
so
great
interesting.
Because, you know, we had, you know, everybody, you know, they all know where they're going. And I'm sort of teasing. I do too. But, you know, the advantage, you know, for me was, exactly to your point, like, you know, Red X has kind of been teased in other books, but, you know, it was great to be able to, before I had, you know, sat down and put pen to paper or, you know, fingers to keys, you know, I could talk to Tim, Mike, and, you know, the both, you know, editorial teams on both books. And they knew exactly the voice of it. And it's, to be frank, it's not dissimilar to, like, you know, when you write Batman or, you know, Superman or anything like that. There are times when, like, you know, you might feel like, oh, like, this doesn't quite feel right. You know, is this? And we did have a few of those moments where, you know, Mike would flag something, or Dixie would flag something, you know, or Tim, you know. And again, that was the advantage of, you know, us planning this thing out early on. I could really share things at an early stage, and, you know, we could each kind of look at each other's books and say, oh, okay, like, I think you could do this over here, this over there. Like, I'm working on another crossover with another DC book, which I don't think has been solicited.
You had mentioned it last time, but you didn't say. Yeah,
but if you can edit this part out, I'll just tell you off the record, it's Swamp Thing. And being able to work with that crew, like, they know exactly where they're going, you know, much like you know, Tim and the Teen Titans crew. And so we've been, you know Ram and I have just been, you know, exchanging DMs, or, you know, we do a couple of video calls once in a while. Like, they'll show me a scene and I'll be like, oh great, I can, like, literally, you know, take that dialogue and put it, you know, in the squad book, and that way you can see it from a different perspective. And it was a similar thing, you know, with Teen Titans and Suicide Squad. And again, hats off to you know, our editorial crew, who was able to both facilitate that but also, you know, encourage us to find those moments. We did that early on with the squad too. Like, there's some stuff from other books, the literal dialogue that we used in the Arkham Asylum break, that we were like, we were waiting for a final lettering copy, and then we use some of that dialogue so that it really feels like, you know, the mandate, you know, as it were, from the DC editorial side, is they really want to make this feel like a world that you're living in. And those little touches, I know for me as a fan, when I see them, it's like, oh, okay, great. Like, this really feels like a world that's been inhabited, stuff like that. So yeah, to answer, it's a long way of answering your question. I 100% had someone to be able to say, like, hey, I don't know if this is quite the right voice. Like, I think a couple times I had a few lines that were just not quite in the right. It's not like they were like, you know, suddenly, you know, he sounded like Pee Wee Herman or something like that. It wasn't like a radical departure, but it was like, occasionally, like, you know, when you're, especially, you know, for Tim, as he's been, you know, building this character out, and they've been building this character out on the title, it was fantastic to be able to, for them to be able to say, like, hey, like, can we massage this or massage that? And it was similar, you know, when on the Teen Titans side of things, you know, in the previous issue, like, you know, we kind of workshopped a couple of, you know, jokes, you know, and Tim and I, as I think, you know, you and I talked about before, we're both have a screenwriting background, and that's a very, you know, collaborative medium. And it's one of the reasons why I think it's an easy transition from TV to comics, because comics are so collaborative as well. To be able to just kind of have that shorthand really quick with Tim has been great. I bust his chops, but, you know, he's a terrific writer and a great collaborator, and really, really was very open and generous, you know, especially early on in the run of both books, frankly. To be able to kind of do this stuff is a real treat.
Speaking of coming from TV to comics, you have an ensemble cast, and I think you do a great job of giving each character something to say or do. Do you approach scripting in a way where you're like, okay, I know this character does this, you're like giving every person a part so they don't yell at you when their line reading comes and they don't have a line?
Right. it's funny you say that, because I did used to count lines when I was, you know, on shows. I would literally, like, because on Final Draft, you can literally do like a little report.
Right.
It was less about, you know, getting yelled at, although there can be that too. It was more about, like, making sure that, In TV, sometimes when you have a group scene, you'll end up in situations where, you know, you end up on the day and the actor isn't saying anything, and they're like, so do I just stand here and look cool?
Yeah. You know?
But actually, funnily enough, the best advice I got on this didn't actually necessarily come from TV, although, it's, like you said, it's definitely been a factor. But I was working on a book, again, at the other publisher, called Doctor Strange and the Doctor Strange and the Suicide Squad. This is my second book.
I read that.
Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme. And it was my first kind of team book. And I was working on something else that it was not comic related. And it was in a group of writers. And one of the writers was actually Mark Waid. And, you know, Mark's, you know, written more comics than I've read, and I've read a lot of comics, you know, like he's like in the thousands. And I said to him, I was like, hey, do you have any advice for team books? And he was like, put all the characters' names on a card and, you know, what you feel their personality is, like in a short, like one or two thing, and their power set. And he's like, and every issue and every scene, you know, look at those cards. If you have like these four characters, like make sure that you're giving them in a moment, whether it's using their powers or, you know, like if there's a character that's like sarcastic or whatever. And it was really, really great advice. And it's something that I use to this day to make sure that, like, to your point, that everyone feels like they're having a moment. Not everybody gets that moment. You know, sometimes, you know, and then certain characters are, you know, just more kind of the Hulk smash variety. So it's not like they're going to have a funny quip or something like that. But I actually use that advice from Mark all the time. And it's a great way to do kind of what you're talking about, which is like to make sure that, you know, everybody kind of has a moment and is either, you know, using their abilities, because you can get kind of lost in some scenes, especially when there's exposition or things like that. Another sort of advantage is in a book like Suicide Squad, there's so much action. There's always going to be a moment for characters to use their powers and to make sure that power usage is coming from, you know, from character as well, is always an added bonus when you can.
It's easy to forget, like when you're looking at the comic, you have the visuals right there in front of you. But when you're scripting it, there's nothing. It's just a void, right? You have to fill it's that void with the characters.
It's a total void. And you know, for me, I really love to trust the artist that I'm working with. And, you know, as you work with each, you know, subsequent issue, you get more and more of a shorthand. And Eduardo and I have a really great shorthand. Like a lot of times for the battles, you know, like I'll try to give like a 2-page spread or something like that. And I'll say like, hey, here's what I think the action is, but by no means should you feel beholden to this. Like I'll tell kind of like the story of the fight, you know, and I was like, here's the sort of moments that we need to hit. Is where I think they can be, you know, it can be a punch or a kick or whatever. But, you know, I want to make sure that he has the freedom, you know, to do what he does best, which is exactly what you're talking about, which is he truly fills the void. And, you know, he's lighting it and, you know, the cinematographer, and he's acting it like he's got way more, like I can write something, you know, that's two lines. It's going to take him 2 weeks to draw, you know? And so I think it's always a good idea to empower, you know, the artist that you're working with, again, in the nature of collaboration, to give him or her like the room to really play. And more times than not, the best moments come from those moments where there was just room and space created for those artists to play and do what they do best and tell the story visually.
Yeah, I remember I was interviewing Scott Snyder, years ago now, when he did All-Star Batman. He was saying, like, with action, like they are the visual artists, not me. I shouldn't necessarily choreograph this. Speaking of a double page splash that was really impressive in Suicide Squad number 4, we see a breakout of sorts, and I just love the sight of Clayface.
And an absolute maniac.
He is. Is there any chance we might see the character more in the future? This is just a total personal question, but from me, by the way.
100%. But, you know, as you may have seen in Future State, and you will see definitely in subsequent issues, not everybody who we're seeing is necessarily the version that we know. Right. And that's like a sort of a tease of coming attractions. But yes, you 100% will. I'm a big fan, and you know, we used a sort of an alternate universe or multiversal version of Clayface that we'll definitely be digging into. He's got such a great power set, but also just speaking, you know, selfishly from the art standpoint, he's such a great visual to bring into a book. But I'm assuming you're a big Clayface fan.
Oh yeah. The animated series is like where it all started, right? I mean, well, it did,
I mean, that depiction, and that, I think they made like a Batman animated figure of him that's amazing. It's like, it's like a 3D, it's like holding the cartoon in your hand. It's amazing.
It really is amazing how like animation too, like the voice acting really informs the character.
So like when there are animation and those performers, like, it can be like sort of viewed as like, oh, they're just kind of phoning it in, because it's like, but it is a full body performance from these actors. Like I got to work early on with Mark Hamill, and, you know, he's an incredible actor. And, you know, we would oftentimes, you know, just put like, we put like ellipses where you want them to kind of like, you know, ramble or, you know, add a little button to a scene. And he would always add like the funniest bits or the funniest jokes for Buzz Buzzard and the Woody Woodpecker show. And it's a really, really hard thing to do. And to your point, it's a lasting effect. Like, there are certain characters, when you see them with a different voice actor, you're like, wait, that's not the character. Like, who is that guy? You know, like, you know, for a lot of people, there's a very specific, you know, voice actor, like, you know, Optimus Prime or any of these, you know, these performances are, they are full body performances.
Something I've really liked about Suicide Squad is it doesn't feel like it's holding back. It's giving us the entertainment we crave, and it feels like you have a long, long plan in place. So I have to ask, because we know comics can come and go on a whim, it seems like sometimes.
Yeah.
In the perfect world, how long is your Suicide Squad run?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, we did want to do exactly what you're saying, and I'm glad it's coming across, which is like, we wanted to be dessert first, you know, like,
right.
We wanted to get to the good parts, and we wanted to be, you know, little to no fat. And when we initially talked about it, we talked about it being like, I don't want to put an actual like number on it, because we may
sure.
with annuals kind of, you know, expand things a little bit, but we talked about like, what would a rock solid year long book, you know, look like. And mm-hmm. that would include obviously the future state stuff and things like that. And we're going to do an annual or two. And we kind of looked at our first annual as kind of, you know, again, to use the TV terminology, as our sort of midpoint, mm-hmm. you know, our midseason, you know, mm-hmm. big, you know, finale. There's some big reveals that happen there and kind of pivot us into the back half. And then there's just some absolute insanity coming in issue seven. Mm-hmm. Issue seven, I think I've posted about this. I can't show it to you, but I will go ahead and call my shot. It is the greatest cover in the history of comics. And when you
Amazing.
See it, you'll know exactly what I mean. And also you'll understand what I mean, where there's some absolute madness coming to the pages of Suicide Squad. But,
and that's September, you know, right? Issue seven?
I think it's September. I don't know. We have an annual that might shift. I'm
right,
not,
that's
again,
August.
I'm really terrible with math. So yeah, it should be September. And okay. That is going to be a ton of fun. And Eduardo and the crew did just an amazing job on that cover. And I can't say enough good things about it. But to answer your question, like, you know, we really wanted to tell, you know, a tight story that had no fat, and, you know, look at it like at kind of like a year long. And look, to your point, like, you know, comics, you know, especially in this market, you can come and mm-hmm. go. And it felt like, mm-hmm. okay, well, we can definitely get, you know, 12, right? If we sell some comics up front.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, my goal was, you know, is like, can we get to like some really cool, nice, hardcover omnibus, you know, with our Suicide Squad in it, you know, that isn't like one of those backbreakers, like my Who's Who omnibus that I love to death, but is like 600 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, like a good healthy size omnibus that, you know, you can take with you, on the road and read. That was sort of always the goal. So we didn't want to tell something that was, you know, years and years and years, because it just didn't feel like the nature of the Suicide Squad, which is constantly changing and evolving because of the nature of the team, that we didn't want to be sedentary in that regard. We wanted to, you know, to kind of keep moving and keeping with the tone of the book. So that's
right.
sort of the plan, you know, and look, best laid plans, like, who knows, we may get to the end of it and have more stories to tell. But the plan was always like, let's tell our story and let's tee it up for the next crew. And I think what that next crew, you know, is going to do will be very obvious by the end of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a really, I think, fun reset, you know, for the squad and a nice, I don't want to say reboot, because that's not what it is, but it's a great way for, you know, the story to continue in the Suicide Squad fashion, you know, which
right.
is you don't really know what's going to happen next or who's going to survive.
Right.
We definitely have prided ourselves on having a pretty big body count pretty early on. and not just, you know, redshirt newbies, you know, we've killed some
sure.
established characters too, which has been fun.
I have to say, Suicide Squad number 5, the solicit for that, they're going to Earth 3. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of were kind of talking about that. Like, there's like going to be a new crew. I
yeah.
assume some of them might be from Earth 3.
You will 100% see some new crew in that book. And also we're going to split them up because of the events of the end of issue 4, which I will keep as a teaser for people to read.
Yeah.
Waller is starting to realize that there's someone, you know, in Del Rev who's maybe got it out for her. Mm. And so she's going to start splitting the squad up. And some of the crew will end up going to Earth-3, and then the other one will go into the other book that we're teaming up with, which is We Shall Remain Nameless for the purpose of this interview, but it will be in Swamp Thing. So
Earth-3, I'm trying to remember what kind of characters are there. Is that where Owlman is and stuff?
Wait, I may have the wrong Earth-3 now because they changed it all. It's basically where the crime syndicate is. Whatever right. Earth that is now. Forgive my rebooting.
One last question. Obviously the movie's coming and we're all very excited about it. I'd have to say though, like, do you feel like the film utilizing characters that general audiences don't know, like Bloodsport, allows you more opportunity? Does it actually like help you inform what you might do with the comic because you know, you could take this obscure character and run with it?
Oh, 100%. You know, something that we talked about early on in the process was like, look, the movie's going to do what the movie's going to do. I'm not involved with any of that stuff. And I am just like you, I can't wait to see that movie. It looks amazing. But it was a huge advantage. Like, you know, I think with a character specifically like Peacemaker, or then later on, we knew we wanted Bloodsport, but we knew we would kind of get to him. But like, knowing in your mind in a way that like that's John Cena, you know, or Idris Elba, you know, like it definitely, you know, opened up the possibilities, but also opened up for us the possibilities to say like, hey, like, you know, it's very clear, you know, James Gunn is a fantastic writer, and he's not just bringing in, you know, bodies for body count. Like, he's telling personal stories. That's I think one of the things that sets his movies apart is they're not just, you know, big set pieces, although they have those. They're, you know, very emotional stories, you know, like, you know, that Mary Poppins moment in the second Guardians movie.
Oh, so good.
Is so good. And it's so terrific. And, you know, again, I don't know what they're necessarily doing, you know, on that side of things, but it was both, you know, the cast, like literally knowing like, oh, okay, this is in my mind. I'm like, okay, this is John Cena. Like that, you start to get the voice, because I started writing even before I saw the trailer, but as soon as you know it's John Cena, you're like, okay, like he's so awesome and such a terrific, you know, actor and such a great presence that you kind of have a sense of like, okay, I think I know what direction, you know, they're kind of going with. But also again, you know, knowing just as a fan, the type of filmmaker James Gunn is, they're like, okay, well, we got to make sure that we're telling an emotional story too. And I think you'll start to see that particularly as we start to peel back the onion on what's going on with Connor Kent. And, you know, some of our other characters, you know, that are having, you know, a bad day while being, you know, trapped in a Dirty Dozen movie. You know,
so, is there any desire to? Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
Is there any desire to have Harley in the book or integrate her in any way since that she's so popular?
I mean, yes. I'll be honest with you. Yes, because she's such a great character, and I've that's a character again. I think that, you know, from Jump, from the animated series through Margot Robbie's performance is just a character that really pops, you know, and you really get a sense of like, oh, wow. So selfishly, yes. But then also selfishly as a fan of the character, I'm really excited about, you know, the new book and her being able to tell her own stories. It's one of the things I thought that was really interesting about the movie, which was like, hey, like, let's see what she does kind of on her own and what kind of team might she build around herself. And so, you know, as a creator, I'd love to put her in the book, you know, because she's such a great chaotic energy to bring to especially a team book. And, you know, hopefully down the road, it's something that we can explore. But as a fan of the character, I'm also excited to see where that character is going. I love any time a character can kind of grow past themselves. And, you know, it was my buddy, former coworker, Adam Glass, who put her on the squad to begin with. And, you know, at the time people were like, oh, I don't want her on the book. Like, she should be with, you know, Joker or fighting Batman. And it's like, no, this is a way for the character to grow. And so, I'm excited to see where she grows from there. And, But yeah, selfishly, yes, I would 100% love to get her on the book. She's hugely popular, but also, you know, just selfishly, she's a fun character to write.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really love Suicide Squad. The action frenzy of it and the ensemble cast is just so well written.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. And if you have any other, you know, follow ups or anything like that, just hit me up anytime.
Well, maybe we'll interview. I'll interview you every 2 weeks or 3 weeks from going forward into the summer.
That's okay. Believe me, when you see the cover for issue 7, I will happily do an entire interview just about that and how exciting that was.
Let's do it. The annual cover too is really cool with the clone.
I know.
Tubes.
Is that out now? Is that out now?
Yeah, Newsarama posted it.
Okay. Yeah, I have no idea when it's been.
Oh, 19 hours ago they posted it. Yeah, okay. So it's fairly new.
I'll have to. See what the response has been online. Yeah, that's a great cover.
The stack of tubes or whatever you want to call them, tanks. Really neat.
It's so creepy. And I think that was Mike or Dixie's idea. And yeah, as soon as I heard it, I was like, well, that sounds cool. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, that's really creepy and fun. So yeah, no, I'm really excited for people to see that annual because it's definitely some shoe drops happening at the end of issue 6. And we get into it kind of to your point, like, you know, before, like we're not saving story here. We want to get to the dessert. So we get to it pretty quickly in the annual and way that hopefully we'll surprise folks.
Awesome.
Well, thanks again. I appreciate your time, man. And
appreciate your time.
Anytime. Hit me up anytime.